Hi, welcome to Civic's Change Agent Chat, episode 18. During these chats, we speak with change agents who are working to create a better healthcare system for us all. I'm Stephanie Spriggs with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare, or as we like to call it, Civic. In this chat, Jonathan Matthew, Civic's former VP of Data and Delivery, is speaking with Drs. James Todd and Stephen Poole from the Colorado Children's Healthcare Access Program. The Colorado Children's Healthcare Access Program used CoAPCD data to evaluate interventions designed to reduce the number of children on Medicaid that go to the emergency department or urgent care for treatment, better provided in a medical home setting. During this chat, we learn about the outcomes of these interventions and whether any cost savings were realized. We recorded this chat in January 2019. Thanks for listening and enjoy the chat.
Hello and thank you for joining Civic's Change Agent Chat. I'm Jonathan Matthew, Civic Vice President for Data and Delivery and Chief Economist. Today we'll be speaking with Dr. Jim Todd and Dr. Steve Poole from the Colorado Children's Healthcare Assistance Program. Welcome, Dr. Todd and Dr. Poole. And if you wouldn't mind, please take a couple of minutes to introduce yourselves and let our guests know who you are and what you do.
Well, I guess I'll start. I'm Jim Todd. I'm currently a professor emeritus at the University of Colorado and Children's Hospital. At Children's Hospital, for many years, I was head of infectious disease and then of epidemiology and of the in the epidemiology program of community epidemiology. I'm specialist in pediatrics and infectious diseases and epidemiology.
And I'm Steve Poole. And last week I was a vice chair in the Department of Pediatrics at the School of Medicine and at Children's Hospital. This week I am a professor emeritus. Jim and I have been working on this project for the last 2 or 3 years. I was the head of the section of community pediatrics at the Department of Peds and Children's Hospital.
Very good. Thank you for those introductions. And I guess I'd start out by asking you to kind of provide a very high-level overview, the elevator speech, if you will, of your project and what you did and hope to accomplish and how the APCD data, All Payer Claims Database data, was helpful in supporting your project. So I'll let you guys decide who to go first, but if you could sort of give us the high-level overview for the benefit of our guests, that would be very helpful.
Well, I guess I'll be happy to start. As I mentioned, as head of community epidemiology at Children's for many years, I have been interested, and Steve and I have worked together for many years on access to care in Colorado for children, access to health care. And we many years ago identified tremendous needs comparing kids in Colorado who have health insurance and those who have Medicaid or no health insurance, that there were tremendous disparities between the two groups. And so Steve created the CCHAP program to try to encourage pediatricians to take more kids with Medicaid and CHIP Plus. And at the same time, I pursued measurements of disparity in comparing those two populations, kids with public insurance and kids with commercial insurance. And what we saw very soon was that kids with public insurance, meaning Medicaid or SCHIP, have much higher utilization rates of emergency departments and urgent care centers than do children with commercial insurance. In fact, 5 times higher. And they were admitted to the hospital 2 times more frequently than kids with commercial insurance. And understanding that it's far better for a child to be seen in a practice where they are known, where their past history is known, where they're going to have follow-up, than being seen in some facility where nobody knows them, nobody knows their past, and doesn't play a role in their future. We wanted to see if there was a way that we could take kids in pediatric practices who have Medicaid and see if we could really reduce that ED utilization rate. And just one last thing on that issue, we recognize that this is not only a quality of care issue, but it's also a cost issue to the state and federal governments, because we, in our estimate, that these kids were using EDs and urgent cares and hospitals, on the one hand, 5 times more frequently, on the hospital case, twice as frequently, but at a cost of almost $1 billion a year of excess cost. Those are charges. So if you calculate excess cost, it's about $200 million a year. And we felt that if we could do a project that reduced emergency department and urgent care and hospital use by Medicaid and CHIP plus children, publicly insured children, that we could improve the quality of their care by keeping them in the continuity of their medical home, as well as we could save the state $100-200 million a year. So Steve, I'll turn it over to you and fill in the blanks.
Well, I can just briefly describe our project, and then Jim can really talk about the analysis. So our interest was in reducing ED utilization by children who are on Medicaid in order to reduce the cost of care, overall cost of care for Colorado Medicaid, in hopes then that we could get Colorado Medicaid to apply those savings to adequately funding the preventive care that these kids need, because they do have disparities in the preventive care. So we did literature review, looked at programs that had attempted to reduce ED utilization by adults. Did focus groups with practices, parents, emergency departments, in order to select those things that we should try within these practices. There's sort of a long-standing belief that either you can't make a difference or you have to do a bunch of things, all of which have a little impact in order to make a difference in the ED utilization rate. So we selected actually 6 things to do, and actually 5 out of the 6 made significant impacts. That is, they saved more money than they cost to implement, and then that savings, which is normally 2 to 3 times what it actually cost for the intervention, we hope then, now that we have our results, to advocate with Colorado Medicaid to help practices afford to do these interventions, and there'll be leftover savings for the state. And Jim, maybe you want to then talk about the analysis.
Well, there's an old adage that you can't improve anything if you can't measure it. And so data becomes very important. And one of the reasons that we came to Civic and have partnered with Civic on this project, and it's still ongoing in the analysis, was that what we wanted to do is measure emergency department and urgent care utilization in the actually three practices that we have been studying. And we know that at least in Colorado at large and in the two major rays that are in the Denver metropolitan area, Ray 3 and 5, that those ED and urgent care utilization rates have been going up for the Medicaid population. And so we wanted to have accurate data about how patients in these three practices were using ED urgent cares, and also to have data that tell us how the practice is doing in terms of trying to minimize excess utilization. And so all three of these practices are on a single computer software system called Epic PEDS Connect, associated with Children's Hospital. So we have very accurate measures of encounters that occur within those practices. So every time a patient is seen in the practice for an acute care or a well child visit, every time there's a phone call, every time the patient and their family utilize the medical record, there is an encounter created. So we can actually count all of those and have those in our shared database between Children's and these three practices. But what we didn't know was if they went to an emergency department or an urgent care that was unassociated with Children's Hospital. So if they went to the Children's Hospital ER in one of its locations or one of its urgent cares, that would be logged in as an encounter, and we would be able to immediately measure that. But if they went to some other emergency department or other urgent care facility, the only way we would know that is through claims data, which it turns out the all-payer, all-provider, all-patient database that Civic maintains would be a perfect way to do that. So we talked with Jonathan and with the folks at Civic, who've been extremely helpful, and have done some preliminary analysis, and that analysis is ongoing. But what it does is it allows us to backfill in the emergency department and ED visits that we otherwise wouldn't have known about. And just as an example, well, actually as a practical fact, what we've shown is that ED and urgent care visits have decreased in these practices between 28 and 50 percent. And this is a really rapid return on investment with the projects that Steve conducted in these practices. It occurred in at least one of the practices almost instantaneously when they initiated what we call our phone first initiative. So encouraging the parents to call the practice first. If they are seeking advice or if a child has an acute illness, rather than going to a nearby ED or urgent care. And Steve can talk a lot about that because he's one of the world's experts on telephone advice and triage, which is what was the foundation of this whole project. But what if we saw these going down, those visits going down, by measuring encounters in the practice, but what was really happening was they were just going to different EDs or urgent cares that we couldn't measure. And that's where the claims database comes in and why it's an important adjunct to this study, because then we can really accurately understand not only who is consistently going to these three practices as opposed to are they going to all sorts of different practices, and similarly, are we accurately counting ED and urgent care visits? Sorry, that was long-winded, but Jonathan, did I raise any issues with you?
No, you do. You guys are doing a great job of anticipating the questions. It's clear you did your homework. Steve, if you could talk a little bit about the specific features of the Phone First Initiative, how it works, you know, what happens, what are, you know, sort of the key features, I think that would be really helpful for people to hear. Again, you've done a really nice job of describing sort of the nature of the problem, how all payer claims database data fits in, allowing you to see a complete picture of the patterns of care for the patients that have been part of this initiative. But again, you know, the nuts and bolts of the initiative, Steve, I think it'd be really helpful if you said a few words about that.
Okay, Oak. So we, as I said, had a nice long list of potential interventions when we began, but with the help of the literature, the practices, parents whose kids are on Medicaid, and emergency departments, we whittled that down to six interventions, some of which are done in the office, some of which are done after hours, and to kind of just move to what seemed to work. The things that the office was able to do was to really begin to promote the concept that if your child is sick or injured, call first. 24 hours a day, call first. And so they really put on intensive campaigns within the practice to get parents to think of that, and then to alter the availability of someone to help 24/7. So they did what's called telephone triage and advice during office hours. Now, in a fee-for-service world like the one we're in now, you know, the successful office or practice is one that fills every appointment slot. And so there's a tradition that the first people to call get the first slots available. Triage and advice, instead, has everyone who calls in go through the process of answering the questions it takes to identify the kids who really need to be seen that day and the kids who could be managed at home. And those who are managed at home receive care instructions over the phone. So triage and advice during office hours reduced ED utilization during office hours by 50%. And that was quite a savings for the state. And another thing that the office could do is call families the day after an ED visit to see how the child's doing, make any follow-up appointments that needed to be made, but also to educate the family on alternatives if they didn't call in before going to the emergency department, you know, the option of calling in and those ED follow-up calls reduced. Those families who got those calls got reduced their subsequent ED visits by 40%. So the office really did have an ability to impact ED utilization. Then there's also telephone triage and advice after hours. And in these practices, that was done by nurses using protocols that have been validated in literally millions of calls over the last 25 years. And the triage and advice, when parents call in, can reduce the ED utilization by 38%. and then a nurse using guidelines can provide advice that avoids an ED visit after hours 22% of the time. Another intervention is for those 22% that the nurse thinks the child needs to be seen in an ED, if they hand those off, just those one-fifth of all the calls, they hand those off to a physician can cut those in half. So that all the way down to 11% actually being sent to an ED. So those are the interventions. We also looked at a triage and advice telephone app that parents could use. But what we learned is it didn't have much of an impact on ED utilization. It was used a lot for information by parents, but it didn't really reduce ED visits. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the things that made an impact. And we used, over the course of actually 2.5 years, rapid cycle QI processes to figure out how to do each of these things in the most effective way. So we're very grateful to the practices for their help in doing that.
That's great. That's really helpful to hear. I guess the other thing I wonder about a little bit is, what's the reception been from, say, Children's Hospital? Has the Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing expressed interest in learning more about this? Or, you know, you mentioned that it would take an investment, likely by the department, to make this widely available, but it also has the potential to save a lot of money. So could one of you speak a little bit about the reception in the Medicaid community and maybe where you see this going in the future?
Steve, why don't you tackle, I'll just say that the folks at Healthcare Policy and Financing know we've been doing this. There's some misperceptions that exist at higher levels in healthcare financing. And one of those is that the Medicaid children who are going to EDs and urgent cares are kids with chronic disease. And so that programs should be focused solely on kids who have chronic disease or underlying illnesses. And it turns out our analysis shows that's true for adults with Medicaid, but it's not true for children. In fact, it tends to be the youngest children in Medicaid families, kids who don't have any chronic illness at all, but probably whose moms are maybe first-time mothers, don't have family around to help out, and so they don't know a lot about caring for a sick child, and so their first reaction was to take them to an ER. But these aren't kids with underlying chronic disease, and so this is sort of at the healthcare financing level, there's a misconception that, well, we should just focus on kids with chronic disease. And the answer is no, you should focus on kids, all kids with Medicaid or commercial insurance too. Your focus should be on all the children, not just a small subset. And when you do that, it says that you need programs situated in the medical home as the alternative to just going off to the emergency department or urgent care facility, which at least in the case of emergency departments, most of the kids going to emergency departments don't have an emergency. They have maybe a minor acute illness, but they're getting charged emergency department rates. And so the whole focus here is on all children, not just a subset of the children, and also on the fact that we want to keep them in the medical home where they not only are known to the families, and Steve, you should comment on how important that is in managing these kids, but also that there's going to be consistent follow-up. So, Steve?
Well, just to follow up on what Jim was saying, 80%, maybe more, of the kids had no other chronic illness at all. And 50% of the kids were infants or toddlers, and 75% were in early childhood, 5 years or less of age. So a lot of it is experience in parenting and experience with illness, as Jim was saying, as opposed to chronic disease. And another point is when we first started out, calls were being done from the ED follow-up calls, for example, were being done from outside of the practice by strangers to the family. And using that rapid cycle QI and trying various methods to reach families and complete this ED follow-up phone call, we learned that strangers outside of the practice complete the process of educating the families about 10% of the time. When the phone call is made from a number that the parent recognizes as their child's medical home, and particularly if it's somebody they know, then the educational process is completed 50 or 60% of the time. So it needs to be done within the medical home. In terms of outreach to healthcare policy and financing, which administers Medicaid, this is that time of the year where there's a lot of turnover with the new with the elections and the new governor. So we have done some work with folks at middle levels in HCPF healthcare policy and financing, but our work really begins now in the new year in reaching out to the new leadership at HCPF. The RAISE, or the regional accountability entities that have been selected by healthcare policy and financing to assist practices statewide, they're now getting their feet on the ground with a lot of recent changes. So the time is now to really take what we've learned to the leadership in Medicaid.
Very good. And where are you headed next? What's next in this project?
Well, we want to wrap it up. We're using civic data to backfill in our ED urgent care calculations, and also to do an assessment of the accuracy of various attribution methods. So we have good records of how often kids are being seen in a practice for acute care illness, for well child care. They're getting their immunizations and so forth. And so it's a good opportunity to use our encounter database and compare it to the civic claims database. Attribution in the state is a real issue. It was a real problem in the last couple years. And just briefly, this is practices are compensated somewhat on the number of Medicaid patients that are attributed to their practice. And yet it turns out that there are often errors in that algorithm that determines attribution. And this gives us an opportunity to, in these three practices, very accurately look at who's really being seen there on a regular basis and what Medicaid views using their attribution algorithm. That's one thing that we really want to do in wrapping up this project is now to take the claims data and validate that in fact are our results what they are. or what they appear to be, which is a very significant reduction in a very short period of time. Usually in children, like in education and in healthcare, people talk about a return on investment, which I think is an unfortunate concept when you apply it to healthcare, but we'll stick with it because people do focus on the dollars. But they're seeing that return on investment occurs over 10 to 20 years. But what we're saying is, no, we're showing that return on investment is occurring within even a single year. And so Steve maybe could comment on what that actually looks like in a practice. In other words, how much is a practice saving the insurer, in this case, the state of Colorado and healthcare policy and financing, at a practice level, how much is it saving them versus how much does it cost to initiate and maintain this program?
So we have done those calculations, and in deciding how to present those calculations, we're trying to look ahead to how payment of pediatric practices is going to look, you know, in a few years. We're going to be shifting from fee-for-service, that is payment for a visit, to more of a payment per insured member or per Medicaid member per year. And so it's hard to really understand the impact when you say you're going to save $90,000 for Medicaid by a particular intervention. But if you present it as a per member per month, do that ED follow-up call costs maybe 50 cents per member per month to the practice, but Medicaid saves $2.50. So I think we're going to be moving to different methods of payment, and probably the PMPM. So we can compare costs with savings.
Very good. Any other sort of final thoughts? You guys have done a really nice job of describing the what's, the whys, the hows. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I'd like to pull it all together, and I know Steve would agree with this, that what we're really talking about is the value case. We used to say this is the business case for giving better care, but I think it's a better approach to say this is the value case, where value is quality or outcome divided by cost, okay? And Jonathan, you've talked about this as well in terms of cost of care, right? And the way I look at it, this is better care. If a mom is concerned about a child who has a fever and isn't acting right, and makes a call to the after-hours program or during the day to the office itself, which is the whole basis of the phone-first program, they're talking to somebody that they already know and who already knows their child. If they take them to an ED or an urgent care, they don't have the child's records necessarily. They don't know anything about that child or the family, and they're not going to know anything about them after. So there's a total loss of continuity. And so what I like to think about, or the way I look at this program, is yes, it's saving money and it's doing it very quickly. And that's something that healthcare policy and financing ought to be really interested in. Now they didn't used to believe that it was possible. The feeling was that, Medicaid kids, there's no way of keeping them out of the ER or the urgent care facilities. The answer is no, that's not true. We can reduce that dramatically and quickly using a phone first program. So it's going to save money, but at the same time, it improves care. Instead of talking to or being evaluated by a stranger who doesn't know you and won't have any idea what happens to you after the fact, and that's how it goes in an emergency department or an urgent care, you're being seen and talking to people who already know you, who already can look at your record, who know if your immunizations are up to date, who know what illnesses you've had, and who can follow up on that over time. And so really the way I look at this is, yes, money's involved, and we can save the state significant amounts of money by just altering the way the state pays practices to render care. But the more important thing is we're also, besides saving money, really improving the quality of care for those children. And for all of us, I think, on this call, that's what we're all about.
That's terrific. Steve, some final thoughts from you?
Well, sort of a byproduct of this, the phone first process, as a byproduct, I recognize that 40% of the time when calling a family who took their child to an emergency department in the last day or two, 40% of the time, they were behind on their preventive care. And this was an opportunity to get the child in for their preventive care visit. And parents seem more motivated to get them in for that preventive care visit when they get that call the day after an ED visit. So it does really improve the access to preventive care as well.
That's terrific. I love the value piece, as you alluded to, Jim. And the preventive care sort of side effect or spillover effect is another important one. We talk about investment in primary care and the importance of primary care, and we've seen this in some work that we've done at Civic that you look at the percentage of total medical spend that goes to primary care, and one very good way for us to improve the patient experience would be to do something to help address that. I hope that the conclusion of the project is as successful as you've seen thus far. This feels like an American Journal of Managed Care article. If once you've done the final analysis and had a look at the final results, it's feels like a really tangible, solid example of how targeted interventions can really generate value and address both pieces of the puzzle, both the quality of care received, access to preventive services, that quality piece along with saving the state some money. And we wish you all the best, and thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to our guests for tuning in and listening to our Change Agent Chat. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.